asked me once, what was in room IOI? I told you that you knew the answer already. Everyone knows it. The thing that is in room IOI is... information on intelligence.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this March 31st, 2011 episode of Room IOI. My name is Estra, and you're listening to Hackerspace's Signal. Tonight, the focus of our show will be on monitoring tools, monitoring software. We'll be chatting with Red, security analyst at Basecamp, who are developing a framework on top of the well-known awesome project. But before we get into that and into what a SIEM is and does, let's get some updates from the German front. The person you hear breathing in the background is Tobo, Room IOI's own German news correspondent, and he's a systems administrator at, oh my god, the...
University of Cologne.
Thank you. I should send him something. Yeah, right. So you're joining us live from Cologne, Tobo. Hi.
Yeah, cheers.
So the news we're going to be talking about in the beginning are actually not so much news anymore, but they have to do with a Green Party politician in Germany.
Yep, Germany.
Whose name is Malte Spitz. Who's that guy?
I haven't really personally heard of him very much because I'm not following the whole politician scene, but he got a bit of internet fame because he once went ahead and told his telecommunications provider to give him all his cell phone tracking data, which they had logged over the time, like in context of the data retention debate, because it's like it's half a year or something of data retention for a cell tower usage. And he just got that data from his provider. And
actually, if I may interrupt, he actually sued Deutsche Telekom, didn't he?
Yeah, he actually had to sue the Deutsche Telekom because, like, the Telekom should have given him his data because there's a subparagraph in some data privacy paragraph in Germany that allows anyone to get access to all of their own data that any corporation has. And they were just like, yeah, go away. So he had to sue them, even though he was, like, in the Vorstand...
board, I guess?
Yeah, the board of the German Green Party.
Well, I think it's also the first time that a person or a politician or not has asked for this magnitude of a data retention.
It's not actually that he was the first one. They started off a wave. They called it the Datenschutzsommer, aka the Data Privacy Summer, which is like where they asked everyone to talk with the corporations that might have the data about what data they are saving of them and asking them to reveal it to them. So he was one of many, and his and other replies were all very short and very, we don't want to.
Gotcha. Well, he was definitely the one who got the most publicity out of this. Zeit Online put a graph and actually a map that maps all the data, the geolocation data, to this map of his whereabouts within those 6 months of end of August 2010 up to the end of February 2011. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to put the link to this up on the wiki so our listeners can have a look at that later on, or actually right now, or rather later on in 10 minutes or something. But yeah, it's quite revealing, I should say, that even though this is only just the data that has been gathered during his, well, his phone was connected.
Yeah,
it gives you all the incoming calls, all outgoing calls,
exactly,
messages.
Yeah.
And they even link it to tweets on his Twitter profile and information that is freely available on the internet. And it gives you a very, very broad view of what he's done within 6 months, hour by hour. But yeah, basically, we're talking about monitoring today. And although this is part of monitoring as well, this goes more into a privacy kind of debate. But the monitoring we'll focus on is more system and network-based monitoring. How about we have a look at those tools that even you as a systems administrator at the University of Cologne are using today or looking forward to use in the future to gather event data, probably to be alerted by some or the other outage, maybe an attack that's going on your service. What are you using at the university right now?
What I'm using at the university right now is actually, it's a very old setup and I don't really want to talk about it. I'm in the process of upgrading it to something more current, to be quite honest.
Probably if you would just name one of these outdated tools that you use.
Big Brother.
Right. So everyone who's listening right now and hasn't done any monitoring on this network so far, probably too late to use this kind of setup. But what are you deploying?
Yeah, well, my main focus right now is getting a Nagios, or probably an iSinger, which is an open source clone of Nagios. It's a, well, not an open source, but a company-free clone of Nagios, to say it more accurately, which is a service and host availability monitoring system, which can notify system administrators when a host goes down or a service specified by a specific check goes down.
So this is basically a system that's running on one server, monitoring a couple of other services on other servers by another little part of this tool called NRPE, right?
Yeah, or NSCA, which is like the passive version, depending on the use case.
Do you also deploy any sort of graphing that interconnects with Nagios?
Yeah, currently there's still a ganglia running, which isn't interconnected so far, but it's planned, of course. And yeah, there's multiple graphing solutions we have already looked at, but I'm having a bit of a hard time getting them through to people. Anyway.
I guess most of these graphing solutions really rely on this RRD tool specification that's been around for years now. We're just using Akakti, for instance, or Amunan at the company I work for, and they interconnect with Nagios just as well.
Yep.
Do you have any experience with the performance of the main Nagios host?
We currently have the Nagios in a virtualized solution, which isn't the best solution there is, but that sort of scales. But you actually see the large delays when you have when you don't fiddle around with the scheduling. That when your host and service numbers increase, that it just gets horribly slow to update some things because it has to upgrade the minimum check interval because there's so many other checks that have to be checked too before you can actually go back to your own check. That doesn't turn to have it, to give it a fair trial. Yeah, there can be
so real-time monitoring does get a little bit less real-time, does it?
Yeah, in one case. The more interesting thing is like where you often get fails is like the back-end logging. If you just log this to a database or something and your pipe clogs up, that's annoying.
So basically, I think the main interest listeners might have in such a monitoring is, even if they have it deployed already, is when would you get alerted, when would you just want to be informed. And there has been a post by a person called Ted Juba, and I really hope I pronounced the name correctly, a post to which we'll link as well on the wiki after the show. It's called Monitoring Theory, and we've both read it, I assume.
Yeah.
It is so funny to read, and though it's so sad, it is so true.
Yeah. Basically, what he's saying is he's retelling what everyone actually knows about monitoring, but many people do get wrong. I think even the monitoring solutions default setups usually get this wrong because, like, your standard Nagios does things like checking for number of logged in users and giving a critical if there's many logged in users suddenly, or just an arbitrary metric, really, which is like, okay, yeah.
Mentioning many and arbitrary manic, I think he has a big problem with these metrics as well. And he does mention another article by the gorgeous Zed Shaw, which we'll link to as well. He's talking about informative and actionable, or only gives, just either one of those two.
He gives tags to what's to notifications that should be given. You can have an informative tag that's like tells you something you should know. An actionable tag that actually tells you this is something you should act on, and
immediately, that is.
Yeah.
Nothing like there's only just 10% of your hard drive for or something. Yeah. Nothing you would want to be woken up at 4 a.m. in the morning probably for. But yeah, he introduces this new tag, if you want to call it like this.
It's a description for lack of tags.
Probably so. And he calls it Cool Story Bro, which is hilarious. So what's Cool Story Bro alert?
Then it's like the use this checks like I just mentioned. It's like, oh no, the load average is suddenly going above something you've defined, or oh no, the queue has so many jobs, etc., etc., etc. And what he's basically saying is, get a fucking graph. You don't really need an alert to tell you that something is higher than you're used to. Just look at the graph, and you will see it if you don't look at the graph.
Part really also is a problem. If you've ever dealt with statistics, you can't just go about numbers by means of, well, let's just make it another power of 10 or something. Mm-hmm. The quote that I wanted to mention is one of these cool story bro alert parts is some metric is greater than an empirically determined mean. I get personally offended by shit like this. Have an alert if it's 10 more than the average. First of all, read Zed Shaw's programmers need to learn statistics or I will kill them all. And second, alerts based on empirical data will frequently give false positives as the measurements the alert takes are new empirical data you haven't seen before, and so on and so forth. And it is really hilarious to read, so you should definitely look into that when you get into monitoring. We mentioned Negius, not only just briefly, there's another platform or monitoring system coming up. We've heard it been mentioned a couple of times before. There is a post which dates back to 2008, actually, but still it is a great article on how Reconnoiter is being developed and what it's supposed to be doing in the future. As opposed to, let's call it an organically grown framework, if we want to be positive about this. This is the one approach to make things right.
Sort of. What he's actually saying is that Reconnoiter is a way to get away from the just checking the what's the current state version of something and actually checking what has happened up to the point that this fail state occurred, and if this is actually something that should have been expected or
that probably is within the means of a curve.
Yep.
It's
that you just take the prerequisites to getting to this point into measurement and adapting it.
I think what I'd really like to see in the future is something that intelligently correlates the data that has been gathered so far and then adapts the levels of alerts or of informations even sent out by email to the systems administrator on what has happened up to this point. And does quite well, in fact, as well on pretty large systems. Say we're talking about not only just a couple of hundred, but a couple of thousand machines.
Yeah, the thing is about that, it's there's still the way how to find the right algorithm, because mostly with the service fail, host fail checks we currently have, it's like finding out how to write a check that actually checks what we want to check, if there isn't one already.
If we know what we want to check.
Yeah, if you find out something that we know we want to check and see as an indication, whereas these tools promise that like they automatically or half automatically gather the relevant data that might explain your fault without you having to worry about it.
Well, so much for the monitoring, which isn't yet more of a security monitoring, which we'll get into later tonight. But a couple, we mentioned a couple of monitoring tools that people can look into. And yeah, if somebody probably wants to set up a Negus installation, can they get in touch with you now, Topa?
Please don't.
Still working your way out.
I don't. I'm not a supporter.
Thanks, anyways, so much for this news update, and we'll be listening to some music now. I think I'm gonna play you 736 Envy, the Boss. Bye, Tovo.
Bye.
Take you to the Hotel Martinet in Brooklyn, where Bobby Millett and his orchestra are offering a program of dance music.
Remember, I'm the boss, and I give all the orders.
Spaces Signal with Room IOI, and as proposed earlier, our guest tonight is Red, aka Red 667, aka we don't actually know this guy's real name. Hi, Red.
Hi, Astera.
So you are working as an auditor, as a pen tester, security analyst for a Vienna-based company, I hear, Basecamp?
Yes. It's a small company, currently about 15 people, but it looks like we're growing.
Excellent. So what do you do in your day job?
In my day job, we have different pen tests for like bigger companies, government stuff, and on the side, when you have time, we will make like new view of the OSIM, the open source SIEM, because we thought it's very useful system, but it's so big and so complicated, and for the management people that actually have to make the decisions, they can't use it. So we try to make it look prettier and more like executive-like, so that people that don't really know their systems but like spend the money for it know where they have to put the money.
I see. Well, actually, OSIM is a pretty has a decently looking UI. First of all, I mean, this is a monitoring special, but still probably not all of our listeners are aware of what the abbreviation SIM or SIEM stands for. So a SIEM basically is a security information and event manager, or security event manager, if you call it SIEM. But in the case of OSIM or Unified SIEM, which is their commercial product, and by there I mean Alien Vault, they integrate a lot of open source tools or components. Could you probably briefly elaborate on which components there are?
The most known components are probably Snort, NTOP, NMAP, and Nagios. Also Snare, POF, ARPWatch, and like everything that's out there on open source that we use in our daily work life are all put together into one system, and different agents collect the data from there and from the syslog and put it into a database. And then there's a big, big web front end to use all the systems together. That's basically what they do. But because there's so many different tools and they all have different output, it's quite a big job to manage all the systems on one box.
So as we talked about Nagios previously with Tovo, these services running there, basically there's one big server that's doing all the logging and monitoring. And then you have NRPE-like, if you talk in the Nagios-like language, agents on the various boxes that collect the data and send it to this master server. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one part. You can place agents on the boxes directly, or you have a centralized system that just listens to the network or makes requests to the boxes. So there's a widespread use case. So if you're having different networks that you don't really want to connect into, you just put there only an agent that collects the data and sends it to the central database to collect everything.
So unlike with Nagios, you're not just doing systems monitoring in terms of, well, this host is almost going down, or we have a lot of traffic coming in here, or, well, these bare bones data that you collect or that you get alerts from. But it has more of a security approach.
Yeah, it has more the security approach because you can also use Snort and have an interface in permissions mode and just hook it up to your switch and put all your data through the one port, so you can monitor the whole network, which will give you quite a good view of what's really going on with the network, and you get fast results if something bad happens there with the Snort rules. And on the other hand, you can use like OpenVAS to use do security checks, or like we'd use Nessus, we like it more, but you have to buy it, and it's not open source anymore since a few years, which is quite sad.
It is. Some of the listeners might ask themselves, especially if they're not into controlling IDS or IPS, why wouldn't you just run these tools that you really weren't running and that you want to have on your network? Say, one Negius installation, a CACTI or a Moonin installation, Arbut, for instance, or OSSEC, side by side, but use this kind of, even you could probably even say overblown framework to collect all of the data in one place.
Because if you have the data all in one place, you can run correlation on it and define different policies. If this event occurs there and that one there and this there, and you can have a bigger picture if it's something really bad is going on, or if just one piece of software gives you a false positive. So if you have more than one tool correlating all together in one database, it's quite easy and fast to make yourself the picture of what's really going on.
So correlation definitely is what Awesome or any SIEM really is about.
Yeah. Just get all the data, put it in one box, then run some scripts that have policies defined and see what's going on, trigger an event or an alarm and contact the administrator as defined.
So in your environment, do you also use Awesome as your, or whatever you're coding around Awesome, as your main IDS or IPS even?
Only as IDS, not IPS. For IPS, I think it's maybe not fast enough. For IPS, I think it would be nicer to use systems based on FPGAs.
So let me ask, what are you or your company using as an intrusion prevention system? Or are you using an intrusion prevention system?
That's not my part. I really do. And we have different like appliances you can use for that stuff.
So you were mentioning easy as well as the term of speed. Now I'm wondering, if you look at a Nagios installation on a very large scale system, you can easily run into, let's say, shortages in terms of memory on the host. And I remember that when Awesome came out and I tried it, it was a requirement you had at least 4 gigs of RAM on that box. But in fact, you needed a lot more to monitor a large scale system. What's your experience with the benchmarking or resource shortages when you use Awesome?
Yeah, the resources are quite a problem. And 4 gigs of RAM may be okay for smaller systems, maybe up to 100 different servers. But then you have problems, at least when you start up the vulnerability tests with Nessus or OpenVAS, that there's not enough RAM anymore. And the other big component is the database that MySQL is used. And if you have big databases and it gets big fast, if you put all the logs and all the monitoring, everything into the database, it gets quite huge, then you have problems with the RAM. So we directly upgraded to 8 gigabytes, and for the bigger systems we just try to double up all the time. So 16, 32, and with 32 it's quite good, and it's, you can monitor a lot of stuff. But then you maybe get, sometimes if the system gets bigger, you might get also trouble with the database. So that's one of the parts that Awesome hasn't made so well. And that I think the guys at Alienworld made some tricks for their unified theme to make it run faster or used it more efficiently, the database. So that's one of the stuff that still has to go into the OSIM, and we're working on that as well.
So is OSIM as a community-based edition of Unified Theme still actively being developed by Alienworld?
They have some developers, but if you look into the source repository on Assembler, then the master of the Git repository just got the last commit at 25th of August.
In 2010.
In 2010, yeah. I don't look into the future that far. And the other branch is testing and unstable. They have development going on, but it's only a few people. And some other people are also developing. It's mostly Spanish-speaking people, because Alienworld was usually based in Spain, Madrid, I think. And so it's also kind of hard to contact them and work with them together. So it's very strange. At the moment, it's more like they're developing, we're developing, and maybe some people out in the internet also do stuff, but it's not really working together as well. And most of the time, if you contact Alienworld, all they want to do is sell you their stuff.
The unified theme.
Yeah,
this is also something I've seen on their website, as opposed to like a few months back, probably, or even a year back. OSIM would have its own main page where it was probably described with documentation, source code to download, and the complete source code, I should say.
Yeah, that's...
That has changed, hasn't it?
That has... changed quite a lot. The documentation that you get is quite old. You may only get to the documentation through the Internet Archive or archived links from Google that are not really reachable from the main page anymore. The source code is also quite a problem, because they have all their stuff as GPL as a license, but some of the source code isn't there. So what's also one of the main parts that missing from their side, that they didn't release as source code, is the policies files and some other stuff. So we started, because the OSIM is based on Debian, quite an old Debian, which gives a lot of problem for updating the tools that are used in the OSIM. We started to move over to Ubuntu LTS and build our packages there, but you can't build all the packages because you haven't got all the code. We try to contact them, but we don't really get an answer. So we have to find the code some other way or just write it ourselves. Packages new.
Would you say that this move away from being overly openly open source by Alienworld is maybe a mistake for this company?
I don't know. I don't really know if they really sell their stuff. If they start to sell it and it sells good, it might not be a problem. But I don't know how many people use it as an open source tool and how angry they will be, and maybe go and see if there's some open source violation done, which could be a problem for them. And yeah, let's see. We're still looking into this way, and maybe say, like, you have to give us the code because you declared it open source, or your code doesn't even run without all the open source stuff, so you have to release it open source anyway. I don't know, we have to think about that and maybe see what comes out if you meet the Alienworld guys So far, we only have limited contacts to them.
So if you were a developer or a systems administrator and you would just now get into Seams or the Awesome project as well, would you actually choose Awesome again?
Not really. Because there's so much work that went into that system by now. We just continue, and it's a nice system, but it's a lot of work to be done. And because it's based on an old system, you get troubles installing it on new systems, and a lot of workarounds need to be done.
Yeah, they actually say so on their website now.
Yeah.
That no automatic install possible at this moment. And I think this moment has lasted for several weeks at least.
Yeah, several weeks or months. And it's hard if you have a new server with a quite new RAID controller inside, you're pretty much fucked.
Dude, who knows? So getting back to your work at Basecamp and the work with Awesome, what are you developing on right now in terms of what can you tell us about it, or what can you release publicly?
The thing right now is to fix the broken system, make it run without errors, all the tools, which is not working with the install, as we already said. And then also the other parts, because it's based on PHP, but luckily we got a guy in the company that likes PHP. I don't know why, but he does. So he works on the front end, which is own view for the executive people, so that they can just go there once a day and have like the highest stuff up there listed in red, or everything prioritized. Yeah.
Right.
And that's going in there, and just the clean up the backend, because also our PHP developer says, okay, we use the system for now and just get to know it and see what it does, and maybe make some beautification that's needed by us, and then probably we have to do a rewrite, because it's not also like it's not clean code, as you would say. Nice.
So if I may ask, how long have you been working on this project now?
Oh, whoa, I don't know, 8-10 months.
That's a long time.
that's quite a long time. And so soon there will be the first box put out as to a customer for testing. So they got like a alpha version of our stuff put in their system, so we can work with bigger data sets, since we don't have so many systems. And they have, I don't know, about 4,000 servers. So that we get a lot of data and then see where we really have to put our next effort in, which will probably be the database.
Right. So getting back to the database just shortly, you were mentioning that Awesome runs with a MySQL backend. Is it possible to also use, say, PostgreSQL or Oracle?
Not yet. Now, for now, it's only MySQL, but that's one of the things I would like to change, that you can use different databases. But for now, MySQL is quite hard-coded into that system.
Gotcha. So you were mentioning that you were about to put one box out to one of your clients. By box, do you mean one of those master servers, or are you also developing some sort of embedded devices to help you with monitoring so many systems?
It's two boxes. One box is there at the server room of or the data center of the customer, lying there, and having a Prometheus interface to look into the whole network. From the inside. Then there's one box at our hoster where we have stuff there to look from the outside and collect the data and push it into the other system for that customer, and we can use it also for different customers. And then there will also be small embedded Linux boxes that have agents running on them that you put into other networks, and they connect back over VPN or SSH to give back the data to the main system.
So that's awesome, the awesome project itself, not the part that you're working on. Work with VPN very well as well, or not? Because I believe that this is one of the main differences between their unified SIEM and the awesome project, that they say unified SIEM works very well with VPN. Awesome, however, does not.
No, awesome does not. So that's one of the parts that we also build ourselves. Since we also have like firewall and VPN stuff in the company, it's not really a problem to do that. But maybe we will just use SSH tunnels because it's quite simple. And
getting back to the agents part, what can we understand if we hear the term agent? Is this sensors, or is it processing information already? Is it just barely handing over different logs or data into a centralized system? What does the agent do?
The agent does collect. The agent does basically just collect. It's two components. So you have maybe one agent. If you have Windows boxes, you install an agent on them. Snare was used before. Now they have their own OSEC agent, or the OSEC agent, which collects the data from the Windows servers and then hands them over to the syslog, or maybe just the one agent and directly from the agent on the main box to the collecting agent there to the database. So you can make sensors also when you have the small box in the different network. Also have a sensor there, maybe run a second snort and detect stuff there, but also have a agent really pull stuff from the machine directly when it's installed on some machine, or if it's installed on that small box, and just say collect the data and then push it to the database. So it's not really doing work, maybe just putting into a different format.
Pre-processing,
yeah. Just parsing through and put it into the database. So not really something is done. Just filling up the database.
So if there's not really something done that's noteworthy, let's call it like this, do these agents draw a lot of resources on the client machines as well or not?
No. So
this would not be an issue with an installation.
This is not really an issue with the installation. The thing that really uses the resources is the main system.
Is there a possibility, let's say you're monitoring 1,000 boxes, could you, via the main server and your interface you have running, like this web interface on the main server, could you push changes of, say, rule sets? Could you push updates that you're notified upon in this web front end towards all these servers at once?
There is some stuff on there to push change to the server, but how we looked into it, it's not working as well as it should. And for now, we leave that part out. So we just mainly use it really as a monitoring device and don't really want to use it as an active component to push changes to different systems.
Right, so you would probably have another server running, say, Puppet, and push changes through that Well, it's not possible to do so via the web interface.
It's not possible to do so, and I don't really want to have it on that box also. Better use a second system.
Right, so speaking of wants and wishes, if we're looking at a security information event manager in general, what would you expect this to do, or what would you wish for it to notify you about or to monitor, as opposed to what Awesome does? Does Awesome fulfill all of these do wants?
Well, for me, yeah, it does most of the part. It's just what would be better if also the people that develop the tools maybe start to use a centralized like language for posting their events and what's going on, so that you don't have to parse all the data from different tools into your own database, and then if someone makes a change, you have to fix everything again. So it would be nice to have all like the open source security tools use some kind of same subset of what they tell you.
And how they tell you.
And how they tell you, yeah. Right. That would be really nice.
So I think one of the problems that you get with the SEMs or SIEMs in general would be, as you mentioned, the consistency in analyzing event data. So a lot of different vendors or companies would use different, probably even proprietary event data formats and also delivery methods. I think they're working on a standardized version, or they have been in the past. Like the Open Group, I think, was updating their XDAS standard, which I believe never actually made it out of a draft status so far. So there should be an XDAS version 2 at some point in the nearest future, I hear.
Okay, I have to look into that and maybe see if we can also contribute some stuff to that. But that's also one of the things that I don't really like, that everything goes into bigger companies, that they just work for themselves, have like huge sales departments or partners that try to sell their product all the time, and basically all the stuff does the same thing, but in their own way, and secrecy has never made stuff more secure.
Most likely not. So to wrap it all up, is there probably some reading source or reading material that you would like to recommend to our listeners who are just now getting into monitoring or into SIEMs that you find noteworthy?
I just, some month ago, I found something on Twitter. I think Christian Riley reposted it. It's the Pentest Bookmarks. It's a Google code project, but it's just a huge wiki entry of maybe 5 pages of links to different parts of security, tools, blogs, and it's about everything that's out there open in the open wild of the internet. So if you have a few months time or a few years, you can start reading there, or just pick out the stuff that's of interest to you.
Of course, we will put up that link on our wiki as well. Could you still name this link for us once?
It's codes.google.com/p/pentest bookmarks.
I see.
Just type in pentest bookmarks Google code and you will find it.
Excellent. Well, so much from the Awesome front, I should say. Oh, by the way, we actually never mentioned the name you gave your project. Does it have a name?
It's called Radar Services, so that's, Yeah.
So I think if we hear something about radar services in the future, we know we can link it to you and Basecamp.
Okay. Let's see. We're working on it. So we have to make the first test and then see what's coming out.
Any ETA on the first release?
Alpha release should be done in the next 1 or 2 months.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay, so have a lot of fun with working on this project, and thank you for your time.
Thanks. You're welcome.
We hope to hear from you soon. We'll be going on with a little bit of music, and after that we'll hear one more update. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, was Bad Wolf with Isotope CC Music, to which I'll post the link up on the wiki as well after the show. Our last guest tonight, again I should say, is Chris John Riley. Chris.
Hi, thanks very much for having me back on the show.
Hello. How about we just make it your show?
We can discuss that.
By now.
Later.
So, as our focus is or was on
monitoring systems, monitoring networks today. What are you going to talk about in terms of monitoring this night?
Well, to try and loosely tie what I'm going to discuss into monitoring, and I'm using the term loosely as possible, I guess I'm going to be talking about monitoring of ongoing security conferences.
Excellent.
Or upcoming security conferences.
Well, this is something Room.io I always has had an eye on, even within the last show where you were very, very secretive about some upcoming event that didn't have a name or anything. But
a mega super secret con. Yes.
Right. So what's about that?
Well, we can finally announce the title of the conference. We finally got through all the paperwork that's required, and B-Sides Vienna is a go. So we can finally announce that B-Sides Vienna will be taking place on June the 18th in Vienna, just after the first conference. And we have a location, an amazing location for the conference. Just had a look around, and I don't think amazing is the word to use. I mean, it's just fantastic, and I can imagine that place being one of the best places for a conference, even better maybe than the B-Sides Las Vegas place, and they had a swimming pool and a jacuzzi. So, it should be a really, really fun experience. There's enough room for us to do everything that we thought we wanted to do and more. So there's going to be a call for papers going out this weekend, and we'll be starting to open up the first phase of tickets so people can come on and register for a ticket for the event.
People should start monitoring their inboxes as well as the website.
Yeah, they should be monitoring inboxes for notifications of ticket sales and CFP opening, and we'll also be putting it up on the bsidesvienna.com website with some information and some links on how they can apply for the CFP and how they can reserve a ticket.
Excellent. On a side note, this B-Sides Vienna is also the pretty much the same thing or running into or worked into or something, the NinjaCon 11 conference, which was kind of merged into being B-Sides Vienna. So if you were looking at that website, you'll be directed to bsidesvienna.com as well. And we're really, really looking forward to any submission, right? So what again was the principle of submissions with the B-Sides conference?
Well, the way talks get submitted and chosen by B-Sides is kind of unique. There's not really a board of people who say, that's interesting, we'll accept that. Or even worse, with some conferences, that's someone I know, so I'll let him talk. B-Sides is all about community participation. You know, you get speakers from the community, and the people who are actually attending the conference get to vote on what they see. So if you get a ticket for the conference, you can vote to say which of the CFPs, which of the talks you really want to see, because that's what it's all about. I mean, it's not about us saying what you should be seeing. It's about the people who are actually coming to the conference, choosing what they want to see and choosing what they think is interesting. So I love that about B-Sides, the uniqueness of how those talks are chosen.
This is really awesome about it. That's true. And that also means that you as in our listeners, should get out and get a ticket as soon as possible. So you get a handle to vote with for a talk, you get to submit a talk, and well, after all, you get a seat at the conference because tickets are pretty limited.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for example, if we're going by B-Sides London as a prime example, they sold out pretty quickly. And now they have 200 people on their waiting list to attend. So get in
crazy.
There fast. Yeah. So it's becoming very, very popular, B-Sides conferences. So get in there while there's tickets available, and they should be going online this weekend.
Excellent. Again, the date is Saturday, the
18th of June.
And it's going to be happening at the Hub in Vienna.
Yep.
Chris, will you be giving a talk or submitting a talk, I should say, there as well, or are you only just organizing?
Unsure at the moment. I'm guessing I'm probably just going to be running around like a headless chicken trying to make sure everything's working. And as I'm going to be at the first conference for the 5 days before the conference, I'm not sure I'm going to have enough time to prepare, but you never know, I might throw something in there. You probably won't get selected, but I'm interested in hearing your talk.
Well, my what?
Your talk.
Good one. So, basically, we now have this very secret con thing disclosed. our time is running up, and I would like to say goodbye to all of our listeners. Thanks for tuning in again, and well, I'll speak to you next month or something. Thank you, Chris, for the update.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Goodbye.